Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we're continuing reading about Prahlad Maharaj's ecstasy. Sometimes feeling the touch of the Lord's lotus hand, he became spiritually jubilant and remained silent, his hair standing on end and tears gliding down from his half-closed eyes because of his love for the Lord. Purport. When a devotee feels separation from the Lord, he becomes eager to see where the Lord is. And sometimes when he feels pangs of separation, tears flow incessantly from his half-closed eyes. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshashtaka, Yuga idam nimeshena chakshusha pravesha idam. The words chakshusha pravesha idam refer to tears falling incessantly from the devotee's eyes. These symptoms, which appear in pure devotional ecstasy, were visible in the body of Prahlad Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
So, here we are continuing hearing about the external symptoms that Prahlad Maharaj had in his ecstasy for the Lord. So it's explained, as we know, there are the Ashtasattvika Bhavas, so different transformations of the body that take place when one is in transcendental pure love of Krishna. So sometimes the hairs are standing on end, sometimes the tears come from the eyes, the body is shivering. Of course, for most people, when they get such symptoms, they may think, maybe I've got COVID. I mean, that's the situation. Most people get these symptoms when they have a flu or something like that. But for the pure devotee, these symptoms are coming because of transcendental ecstasy. And therefore, it is explained that one may also get some of these symptoms of ecstasy before they are qualified. Also, they happen, and they may be genuine. This is known as Chaya Bhav. Bhav means emotion, and Chaya means shadow. So there are said to be two receptacles. You understand the word receptacle? It means like a container. There are said to be two receptacles of bhava. Anyone know what they are? Where bhava is overflowing. There are two, the Goswamis state this, there are two places, or two receptacles. Anyone know what they are, what they may
the
be?
The dham.
The dham, very good. The dham is one.
And association of pure devotee.
A pure devotee is another, yes. These are the two places in which bhav is overflowing. In the heart of a pure devotee, and in the dham, the place of the Lord, where he performed all his pastimes. So therefore it's said that if one goes to the dham, or if one comes in the proximity of a very, very advanced Vaishnava, then because those places are overflowing with bhava, because of one's proximity to that place, even before they are qualified to experience that bhava, some of the drops of that bhava may flow onto them and they may experience something beyond their imagination. It's amazing when you actually see the videos of Prabhupada's time. Like, I don't know if many of you may have seen the video of Radha Gokulananda in Bhaktivedanta Manor being installed. Have you seen that? Prabhupada is on the altar, all the devotees are on the altar, and they're circumambulating Radha Gokulananda. This was Janmashtami 1973. And then they all come round, and then Prabhupada comes round, and then he looks at Radha Gokulananda and he puts his hands up and he starts dancing, and everyone's dancing. And it looks like everyone is in ecstasy. And when you see the videos of Prabhupada, we once had a Mother Kalangana, who was Prabhupada's disciple for like 40 years, she cooked Gokulananda's Mangalarti sweets, very famous.
Polish
lady. Yeah. So she is very amazing personality. Every day she would be up by 2 o'clock chanting, and she would make Gokulananda's Mangalarti sweets. They would paint each sweet, like very intricate painting on every single sweet. And I heard also that she made a new recipe for one sweet called a Gokul sweet, which is like a carob sweet to offer to Gokulananda. But somehow or other she was not getting the recipe just right. I heard this story. So she went in front of the Lord and she prayed that I want to get this recipe right so I can cook it for you nicely. If you enlighten me with the recipe, then I promise I will never eat one myself. And so like that, somehow she got the empowerment and she would never take the Mahaprasad of that sweet, because she got the, that was her vow. So very, very amazing. So once I asked her, like, when you look at these videos of Prabhupada's time, like being in the midst of, like the devotees are so ecstatic. Like, it would be amazing to be in a kirtan like that. I don't think I can have experience. She said it was completely different in Prabhupada's presence. Of course, Prabhupada is always here. And according to how connected we are, we experience Prabhupada's presence. But still, in the physical association of a Mahabhagavat who's overflowing with bhava, transcendental emotion, definitely one can begin to experience some amazing things, you know. So yes, we are praying that we can have this purification. But let me ask you a question. Do you think a devotee should pray to experience ecstatic symptoms? What is your feeling? No? No. Everyone's saying no.
It's the Shikshastakam. We pray that we can cry for chanting.
So you're praying to cry for Krishna?
In the Shikshastakam. Mm-hmm.
When my hair is done.
Okay, let me read your bhaja. So everyone is saying no, right?
No,
we should not. Yes. We should not pray for ecstatic symptoms.
At least in the Shikshastakam, it says we should pray.
Okay. So this is a song by.
Should we pray for relief of suffering? First of all.
Okay, here is a Narottam Das Thakur. Gauranga bolite habe pulaka sharira. Hari hari bolite nayanay babe nira. It's Prabhupada's commentary on it. He hasn't written the word for word. In this song he says, Gauranga bolite habe. One has attained the perfection of chanting when as soon as he chants the name of Gauranga, at once there is shivering in his body. This is not to be imitated, but Narottam Das Thakur is asking, when will that opportune moment come to us when there will be shivering of the body as soon as we chant Lord Gauranga's names? And after the shivering, Hari Hari Bolite Nayane Bhave Nira, while chanting Hare Krishna, when will there be tears in my eyes? So that's interesting. What do you think, Jao? Should we pray for ecstatic symptoms or not?
My thoughts are we should pray for prema, for love of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so in those prayers, in that anchoring of the heart is like a side effect to the symptoms.
So it's not the symptom you want, it's the substance. And the symptom is just indicative that you have the substance.
Like if you want to, you take the medicine because you want to get healed, but you need to take the pill. You know?
So it's not about the pill, it's about the getting better. Yeah, I think that's the point, that we want to, when even Narottam is saying that when will my body shiver, when will the tears come, it's not so much about the symptom of ecstasy itself, but the fact that that symptom symbolizes that you have pure love for Krishna. But there are, it's said that there are different types of ananda. Jadanand means the happiness of material things. Higher than Jadanand is Brahmanand. The happiness that comes from Brahman, or being in the spirit. Higher than Brahmanand is Premanand. The happiness that comes from love. But there's something which is higher than even Premanand. You know what that is?
Bhakta.
Jadanand, Brahmanand, Premanand. There's something higher than even Premanand.
Jada
means matter. There's something higher than even Premananda. I give you one word clue. Daruka.
So Sivananda?
Guys.
Yes, that's it. Sevananda. Sevananda is even higher than Premananda, because when Daruka was doing his service, then what was happening? Because of his Premananda, he was getting ecstatic symptoms. And the ecstatic symptoms were stopping him from serving. And therefore he said, I don't want the ecstatic symptoms. I don't want Premananda. Because higher than Premananda is Sevananda. Therefore, neha yat karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate tirtha pada sevaya jivan api mito hisaha. If all your karma doesn't lead to dharma, if all your dharma doesn't lead to vairagya, and if your vairagya ultimately doesn't lead to tirtha pada sevaya, you're a dead person, even though living. Sometimes we meet people on the street, they look like the living dead, you know? Like they're almost like living, but they're just like dead. But here we're saying that even if you're vairagi, even if you're practicing spiritual life, even if you've advanced so much, but you are not engaged in the service of the Lord, you are dead, actually. Real life is about service. Therefore, one devotee always used to say to me, don't try and be happy. Don't try and be happy in your life. Try to serve. That's a very interesting point. Don't try to be happy. Try to serve. Because in service, everything is coming. That Sevananda, you cannot compare anything to that. So yes, here Prahlad Maharaj is experiencing so many ecstatic symptoms, but that is indicative of his substance, his love for Krishna, and what he's feeling inside. And and so yes, to become absorbed in service. It's not so easy to become absorbed in service, because in service there are obstacles, in service you have to make sacrifice, in service sometimes you are not getting any reciprocation from others, in service sometimes you don't see the result, in service sometimes one is not feeling that they're getting anything out of it, and therefore it's not so easy to be a servant. Yet the more that seva bhava deepens, the more that attitude of service deepens. We once had another devotee at the manor, his name was Jiva Pati Prabhu, many of you may know. He was also a Prabhupada disciple, and he served the deities for many, many years. Anyway, in his final days he became very sick, so he was in the Watford hospital near the manor. So he was in the hospital, and then every day the devotees were coming to see him. They counted actually in his life, he must have done like, offered like 5,000 Mangalartis, like 7,000 evening arties, like it was just ridiculous. Like, every day he was on the water serving the deities for maybe 30 years. Anyway, in his final days he was in the hospital and then the devotees were going in and out, and then on one particular day the devotee was about to leave, and Jivapati Prabhu said to the devotee, he said, the doctor came today. He was very unhappy. And he said, the doctor came today and said that I may be able to leave in a few weeks and go back to the temple. So the devotee said, that's amazing, that's great news. Like, why are you so unhappy? And then he looked at the devotee and he said, the doctor said I may be able to leave, but if I come back to the temple, I won't be able to do my service like before. So he was very morose about that. And then the devotee felt the impact of how much he felt it. Anyway, the devotee said a few things and then the devotee left. And then the next day, Jivapati Prabhu left his body. So the devotee had the realization that for him, his service was his life. That was it. There was no other reason to live if there was no service. And therefore, once the doctor told him that even you'll be able to leave, but you won't be able to do your service, then he almost felt like, well, then what's the purpose of living? And therefore, he lost the will to live. And that was the devotee's realization. And in this way, he left serving. So yes, our service. It is said that we have two great assets in our life. One is our service, and the other thing is our vows. Therefore, there's the example of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit had been given Tota Gopinath to worship. And not only had he been given that service, but Gadadhar Pandit took the vow of Kshetra Sannyas to remain in Jagannath Puri and serve Tota Gopinath for the rest of his life. So he was very happy. He had his service, he made his vow to stay in Jagannath Puri. And even Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri. But then at a certain point, Mahaprabhu, he left Jagannath Puri. So Tota Gopinath was thinking, I came here to Jagannath Puri to get Mahaprabhu's association, and now Mahaprabhu is leaving. And so Gadadhar Pandit said to Mahaprabhu, I'll come with you. I'll come with you. I leave my service of Tota Gopinath behind. I leave my Kshetra Sannyas behind. Mahaprabhu said, how can you do that? How can you leave your service behind? How can you, you've taken Kshetra Sannyas to remain in Jagannath Puri. How can you not stay in Jagannath Puri? You've taken this vow of Kshetra Sannyas. And what does Gadadhar Pandit say? Pandit kohe jaha tumi sei nila chal. Pandit kohe, Gadadhar Pandit said, jaha tumi, where you are, sei nila chal. That is Jagannath Puri. Kshetra sanyasa maura oka rasatal. My vow to take Kshetra sanyas, that vow can go to hell. Because wherever you are, that's Jagannath Puri. So he was willing to give up his service, and he was willing to give up his vow to be with Mahaprabhu. But then what did Mahaprabhu do? He told him, no, you have to stay in Jagannath Puri. You have to do your service and you have to honor your vow. Because through you I want to teach the world that someone who honors their service and someone who honors their vows, from the seva and from the vrata come all the spiritual wealth in your life. And so sometimes we can feel our vratas and our seva to be like a burden. Actually, Prabhupada said, when you don't have good hearing and chanting, then all your service will become like a big burden. If you don't have good hearing and chanting, then you'll be worshipping the deities, but you'll just think, oh my God, my spiritual master left me a big burden. So we will see our vows and our service to be a burden if we're not nourished and we're not understanding that those are actually our greatest assets in life, because through those things all spiritual wealth will come. So these are some points to consider on this verse. Prahlad Maharaj is experiencing such ecstasy, but higher than the ecstasy of prema is the ecstasy of seva. And service is the real substance of one's life. And the service and the vows that we have, when we honor them, then from that everything comes. It's the service which connects one to Krishna. Therefore Krishna says, bhakti amam abhijanati. Only by devotional service can you understand me. And so that service that we have is the most important asset in our life. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Rama. Anyone has any comments, questions?
So I have a question that I'm experiencing some lack of clarity in my life related to this attachment to service, which is quite important in cultivate bhakti. And basically my question is how to know our service. For example, now I'm coming from New Mayapur and I volunteered myself to do some projects, but no one asked me to do. So one type of service is when the authority asks you to do. But sometimes authority is not seeing other possibilities, so we can step forward and also propose ourselves with our abilities to help and to serve. But now that I'm moving away, how to know what is my real service? To what should I attach myself?
So one should always have guru in their life, whether it's Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, because Rupa Goswami is saying there are 64 items of devotional service, but it begins, Ado Guru Padashraya, it is through the Vaishnavas, and particularly a Vaishnava that is guiding you in spiritual life, that you can actually be introduced to all the angas of bhakti. So if one is not having Diksha Guru, or one has a Diksha Guru but no contact, then one must have a Shiksha Guru. And through that Shiksha Guru, one should take guidance, one should reveal their plans, one can express their desires. And then after all is said and done, then one accepts the guidance of the Vaishnavas. But here's another point, that you may have a Shiksha Guru or even a Diksha Guru in your life, but until and unless you've established a relationship of trust, that they have that intimacy with you to be able to tell you what they really want to tell you in their heart, because they know that you will follow, then even then you may have guru in your life, but they may not give you the guidance from their heart, because first they need to see that you will actually follow it. So there may be Vaishnavas in your life, and they may just say, yeah, it's okay, you can do this or you can do that, because still you haven't established that bond of trust with them where they can open up their heart to you.
To give the instruction.
Because Guru will not give instruction if the person is not in a position to take it. Because then it will become more injurious to that person's spiritual life. So when that relationship is very, very weak, not weak, but maybe not established, then they will just say very generally. And the more that you are invested in that relationship and the trust and love is there, then more. And therefore Prabhupada had that. Prabhupada could tell Tamal Krishna Maharaj, no, you leave, I want you to go to China. And Prabhupada said, whenever I want something done, I'll call Tamal Krishna. Because Prabhupada had that trust in him. So sometimes when we're approaching Guru, the disciple is always thinking, can I trust my Guru? Can I have faith in my Guru? Will I be able to, will the Guru take me back to Godhead? And it's all like a one way. Can I have faith in them? Can I have trust in them? But what they don't realize is that also, can they have trust in me? Can they have faith in me? It's one thing to have faith in the Guru, but it's quite another thing if the Guru has faith in you, because then the relationship becomes very dynamic. So firstly, have those Vaishnavas, but don't stop there. Invest in those relationships, and then all the guidance will come. Krishna is ready to give all guidance to the devotee. Krishna says, Satata yuktaranam bhajatam piti kuruvakam dadami buddhi yogam. I give the way, I give the intelligence, I give the insight. Krishna is ready, but are we ready to hear? It's a difficult thing, because we all have an independent spirit. We all came to the material world with a desire to enjoy and a desire to be independent. So those two psychologies run very deep within the conditioned soul. So therefore, it's not so easy to submit to a Vaishnava. But no one became a great Vaishnava who didn't submit to a greater Vaishnava. That's the process.
That's why it is very important. That otherwise I would say to you, the only thing I would say about initiation to non-initiated devotees, that they make sure before accepting spiritual master that there is this bond of heart, not only the official initiation, but that they have to be sure that what they are doing.
Yeah.
Better wait 10 years or more and be sure that this person will, who can go back to Godhead or to Prabhupada, than to rush for this guru, that guru, and then thinking, oh, what did I do? I mean, maybe I made a mistake, which is terribly harmful for one's spiritual life.
It's
even more harmful than to marry a woman you realize you don't like her, because it lasts 25 years. You know, but when you get involved with the guru, then it should be life after life. Then you cannot allow yourself to make mistakes. So you have to be.
You should not take it lightly. It's a very.
That I said to the non-initiated devotee.
Yeah, we're singing every morning. Shaksha dhari trena samasta sastre. That, you know, as good as God. One disciple approached the guru, I won't say who it was, and he wanted to take initiation, and the guru looked at him and he said, as good as God. Are you ready? As good as God. Are you ready? So that requires like strong shraddha, strong conviction. But if one has that love and trust both ways, then it becomes very, very dynamic.
Another thing, King Dasharatha has the opposite mentality. Out of righteousness and dharma, he had to ban his son, Ram, and he died from that, just out of righteousness, so-called righteousness. But Ram was God, so what is better than God? Why did he have to put righteousness before God, before his son? That which Gadadapani did. You are my life and soul, so that, to hell with my vows. He had the opposite mentality, Dasharatha, King Dasharatha. But he died out of separation, as you know.
And I think you find that in Shastra, that different devotees will express their Krishna consciousness in different ways. And both can be equally Krishna conscious. So someone, their expression of their Krishna consciousness may be, give up my vows and just go. And another's may be to maintain my vow. And, you know, and they, it's their own, because spiritual life is also personal, no? So, I'm sure we can think of examples of that. Can anyone think of an example where two devotees did something which was seemingly opposite, but they were both completely Krishna conscious. Can you think of any example like that? Where externally it seems like they did very different things or had a different mentality, but they were both perfectly Krishna conscious. Yes? Okay, next one.
They took a different position to do their service to Krishna. They didn't agree with the position they took each other, but they were both Krishna conscious.
Some of it is certain, and that's a good example of how Bhishma was in a certain situation. It was circumstantial. He had made the vow to, you know, protect whoever was on the throne, and even therefore he knew that the Kauravas were doing so many wrong things. He was still following them. Anyway, Mahabharata is complicated. We won't go into Mahabharata Katha now. But yeah, that's an example, you know. So Krishna, everyone is an individual, and everyone expresses their Krishna consciousness in their own way, and therefore,
Do you have an example of people who did opposite thing, but both were Krishna conscious?
I mean, the first thing that came to my mind was, for example, on one hand, Mahaprabhu would not meet Prataparudra. He said, like, Niskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajanon Mukhasya Param Param Jigamisor Bhavasagarasya. That to associate with such a worldly minded person is more dangerous than drinking poison. And he would not see him. But then the same Mahaprabhu, on the banks of the Godavari, met Ramananda Rai. And not only did he meet Ramananda Rai, he spoke with him for 7 days. And not only did he speak with him for 7 days, he heard from him. He was also a worldly man. He was also a governor. So, is it that Mahaprabhu was, his contradictory behavior was Krishna conscious in one way and Krishna consciousness in another, and not in another way? No. They were both perfectly Krishna conscious decisions, but in each situation he was teaching a different principle. When he was not meeting Prataparudra, then he was teaching the principle asat sanga tyaga eva shavachar, that give up, make sure you're very, very careful who you associate with. Anyone who's having contact with material things, their association can be very, very dangerous. Of course, that wasn't Prataparudra, but he was teaching the principle. And when he met Ramananda Rai, he was teaching the principle that, you know, Naham Vipro, Nacha, Nanapatir, Napi, Vaisho, Nasudro, we're not any of these designations. We are ultimately servants, and you must look beyond all the externals. So both are very powerful Krishna conscious principles, and both stand, even though it looks like a contradiction. So some, like, you know, like Mahaprabhu, I'll give you another example. Mahaprabhu, like, he banished Chota Haridas, like anything, like for something seemingly small. Yet Mahaprabhu was very liberal in meeting his own mother. Generally for sannyasis, you're not meeting your mother like that on more than one occasion. And not only that, he relocated according to his mother's desire. So on one hand, he was showing the great strictness of sannyas. And on another hand, he was showing how relationship and bhakti is more important than sannyas principles. Which one is more important? Both are important. So the contradictory behavior is not contradictory, is simply showing a principle in each situation. Sorry.
I was thinking of Srila Prabhupada in different occasion where he said so many contradictory things.
He said that two sannyasis came into the room, no? And then he said to one sannyasi, now you are a sannyasi, your duty is to travel and preach, so tomorrow you should leave. And then the next sannyasi came in and Prabhupada said, so you are a sannyasi, your duty is to stay in the dham for the rest of your life and preach to the devotees. Just like, it's very individual how we practice Krishna consciousness.
There's so many examples. We follow the principles and everything, and then in Vrindavan, he asked to put a room for the people who were smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee so they could come. Once they are finished, they can come to the arti. My father, he had so many examples like this where Prabhupada was saying.
This is famous about Jananda also. He was giving beer. You know, Jananda, the first ISKCON saint.
Oh, Jayananda.
Jayananda or Jayananda.
Jayananda.
Who told me that? I don't know those days. He was, you know, very expert to engage everybody to help beating the cart of Jagannath. So I heard that one guy, he was ready to work, but he wanted beer. So he would buy beer and let him work. Yeah. And then gradually, the guy maybe gave up the beer, I don't know. But this is, I mean, in my case, I'll tell it. It can be very dangerous. Like when I was new devotee, I'll say it. It's a experience. I was new devotee in Rue Le Sueur, and the temple, the new devotees. In charge. He told us, because we were just in the temple for 2 years or 2 days or 3 days, you know. He told me, for example, if you need to smoke because you have habit, you just go at the corner of the street, you take your cigarette, and you come back. Because he knew we are just more or less addicted, you know, to our life. So I did that. But then as another devotee who came, he shook my kurta and the packet of cigarettes fell and I got kicked out severely out of the temple. Physically out of the temple. So, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. So I think the point is that Prabhupada could make such things. Obviously, he was seeing the bigger picture, and sometimes if we make a judgment, we may not always be seeing the bigger picture. But I think the point still stands that there are many ways and many seemingly contradictory ways to practice Krishna consciousness, which are all perfectly Krishna conscious. And so that's a very important principle of spiritual life, because otherwise we are a personal movement, but we become impersonal because we think everyone, one size should fit all. And that then is actually very, very dangerous, because it undermines the whole aspect of a personal movement. So we must be personal. We must realize there is difference, but in that difference we have to find Krishna consciousness. And that was Prabhupada's genius, that he was just able to see everyone and help them find a way in which they could be Krishna conscious. And just engaging people according to their propensity. That was like perhaps one of Prabhupada's most powerful spiritual leadership qualities. Anyone who can do that is like, wow, you know. Prabhupada could see in a temple someone was a little bit independent or someone was not getting along with everyone else, so then he would just call them and say, I've got a big mission for you. Like, you've got to go to this faraway place and set up a temple. And they would flourish because they needed that independence, they needed that ownership, and at the same time they were driving everyone else at the temple crazy. So everyone was happy. And that was Prabhupada's genius, that he was able to do that.
Yes, please. Krishna also make such an example when says to Arjuna that you shouldn't leave, that you should fight, this is your duty. But with Uddhava he says you should go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because they were different. They were, you know, Uddhava was going towards sannyas, and you know, Arjuna was a Rajarishi, so yeah, we must take Krishna conscious, it's very personal, time play, Desha Palapata, very, very important principle.
There is also this devotee, because in Bombay, Mumbai, with Tamal Krishna Maharaj was totally upset with him. And he said to Prabhupada, let us get rid of this guy, you know, he's too much. Prabhupada said, be patient. And then this guy continued, he had the habit, he started to play with, put water in one ear and make it go out from the other ear. You know? So Tamal Krishna said, what is the use of this guy? He's really doing crazy things. Then Prabhupada told him, you don't know what is the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. You know? And gradually the person became very good.
There's many examples like that, no? Even the devotee Kushakata Prabhu. No? Like he was like a kind of not like properly dressed, not like clean. The devotees wanted to kick him out of the temple, no one could tolerate, and Prabhupada just gave him a chance. And he became a Sanskrit scholar. And he, most of the song books that we, many of the song books that we read, he translated them.
Yeah. And I was in Vrindavan when Manidhi Swami, you know Manidhi Swami? I was thinking at that time, you know, this ISKCON, so great, we are supposed to save the world, but our sound system is so bad that we cannot hear what the devotees are saying. I remember one devotee was preaching, popor. What is popor? It was Prabhupada, you know, he was pronouncing. But I remember when Manidhi Swami, it was the day after Kushakata died in Vrindavan, everything I could capture in my ears, you know, it was so clear, the way he spoke about Kushakata Prabhu, Manidhi Swami. Everything was, because he's a very eloquent, he knows us to speak in the mic, you know, that which not everybody knows to do. It was everything, you know, they say the gopi, they heard the word, you know. But goodness, it was so clear.
Yes, so yes, let us find our way according to the guidance of the Vaishnavas. Okay, so I think we can finish there. Grand Rajana Bhagavan Ki.